Chapter 7. "Alexa," Reach said, "now would be a good time for you to be available again."
"I've been here the whole time."
"No, you haven't. I tried. Listen, patch me into First Platoon's general channel. I can't think how to do it right."
"You'll get the hang of it."
A chime sounded in Reach's brain.
"You are now patched into First Platoon's general channel."
A full-on fight had begun, judging by the echo of gunfire. The calm reports through the channel only reinforced the reality that they were getting hit for a third time.
"Here they come again, Delta,"
one of the team leaders shouted across the comms. The sound of gunfire increased for a moment, then slowed to a trickle.
"What are they doing?"
another asked.
"Trying to run us out of ammo?"
"Sure looks like it."
Reach ran through the forest to assist on the line, this time without Alexa's prompting. The white bark and black leaves made it seem like all the color in the world had drained away, like he had been somehow transported into an old black-and-white photograph. Things seemed flat, two-dimensional. He focused on a tall rock that split a pair of meter-wide trees poking out of the soil to his left. It was large enough for him and two accompanying squads to take cover behind once those soldiers caught up to him. Reach ducked down at the sight and began to crawl far enough over the edge of the boulder to observe the darkening forest beyond.
"Your drone," suggested Alexa. "Don't forget."
"Right." Reach slid back down and sent the drone up. Second Platoon was now in the midst of First's lines near Sergeant Tran's team, who were taking occasional shots at something. Reach made eye contact with one of the Rangers who pointed out the enemy's position. He oriented the drone, struggling to see the Rupak soldiers clearly in the low light. Every time one of them pulled the trigger on his Gauss rifle, Reach spotted a faint flash of blue light. He was about to ask Alexa if an infrared overlay was available for the drone, but as soon as he had the thought, there it was. He relayed the positioning of the Rupak soldiers to the Rangers from 2nd Platoon.
"Watch for the blue flashes, then light up the area."
The teams unfolded along either side of the rocks and trees, forming a concentrated line of fire, evenly spaced to avoid everyone getting jacked up by a lucky toss of a grenade or RPG fire. Not that Rupak seemed to be employing those weapons. Another of the Rupak Gauss guns flashed, prompting a ranger to shout, "There!" The full intensity of 2nd Platoon's deployment came down on the distant shooter. Another muzzle flash presented a new opportunity for dishing out some hurt, and they repeated the process.
"Whoever's on that rock, keep it up,"
someone shouted. Reach worked through Sergeant Soto to make sure First knew their positioning. It was just getting dark enough that Reach thought the teams might provide themselves an edge by using night vision. The sun was still up, but in the forest, it had faded considerably. He reached to pull his NV goggles down, only to find that his helmet was without them.
"Alexa, tell me I have some kind of night vision."
"You have some kind of night vision."
"Really?"
"Yes. It will activate as needed to provide you with the best sight picture possible."
Reach spotted two Rupak soldiers moving toward the rock. He popped up and sent two shots at the location seared into his mind from the drone feed, killing both men with headshots. He dropped back down before a barrage of return fire could strike him.
"More are coming," Reach swiftly told his team leaders. "Switch to NV and stay off the rock to avoid silhouette."
The teams complied and dropped several of the oncoming Rupak a second later under a new fusillade of Ranger fire.
"One squirted through," Stanga called out.
"Got him,"
shouted Private Dunn. There were so many targets, all Reach could do was keep pulling the trigger, watch men go down, and sometimes see them pop right back up before being dropped again. He changed magazines, and an internal tally told him exactly how many men he killed. One per trigger squeeze, always a headshot. Never did his targets rise again. A Rupak soldier fumbled for something on his belt, and Reach immediately thought of a grenade. He dropped the man with an easy trigger pull. An incoming round chipped a rock near the left side of his helmet, and something broke through his visor and stabbed his cheek just beneath the eye.
"Damn it!"
Reach's hand tore away his face mask, the helmet seal already lost. His fingers went to his face and came away bloody.
"You all right?"
asked Dunn. Reach blinked. He could see fine.
"Yeah, just a little sting. They know we're here, so keep your heads down. Who has grenades? Use them."
He hustled down the line,
pleased to find that the potentially acidic atmosphere didn't seem to bother his lungs as he sucked in adrenaline-fueled breaths. Crawling through the underbrush, he looked for a new position to rejoin the fight. The boom of the grenades brought a corresponding lull in gunfire in their sector. Sergeant Tran's section was as intense as ever. Reach found a spot near an empty hulk of metal, something out of place in the primordial forest. It was rusty, but more than capable of stopping a bullet. Maybe one of the missing construction robots from the camp. Didn't matter. Focus on eliminating Rupak. He spotted a gaunt soldier limping toward the line, his right leg mangled and bleeding badly. Reach fired, as did someone else. The rounds stuttered on target, and the soldier doubled over and dropped face first to the forest floor. Reach searched for another, found him, and saw him drop before he could squeeze the trigger. The same with the next target. It was a case of too many rangers in the sectors zeroing in on the same dwindling Rupak advance. He swung behind the big metal object he used for cover and took a breath. To do otherwise was simply wasting ammunition at this point.
"Got him on the run," Sherman announced.
His rangers cheered even as they sent well-aimed rounds into the retreating enemy's back. Reach's implant buzzed. It was First Sergeant Nash.
"Badger's inbound, landing at Site 1 now that the first heavy is cleared. You want me to deliver?"
"Negative. Line is secure. I'll come back with Stanga's squad and take it direct."
Reach grabbed Stanga and his squad and hustled back toward the camp, slowing his pace to ensure they reached the landing site together. They timed it perfectly, catching the heavy hauler that brought the Badger down as it lifted off amid a spray of black soil and grit. He pinged Lieutenant Sherman.
"Hatchet 02, be advised we have secured the Badger and are moving it to your requested location."
"Sooner the better."
"Out."
"Load up,"
Reach ordered Stanga's squad. The Rangers poured into the hauler and surrounded the Badger inside.
"This thing almost makes me want to cry," said Stanga,
caressing the hull like he was thinking about marrying it.
"Damn American beauty."
The vehicle was all angles and guns. 5 guns, to be exact. Underneath were 6 no-flat wheels that allowed it to handle just about any terrain. It could motor across a river or lake, thanks to its waterproof undercarriage, while providing enough space for 10 fully loaded troops to hitch a ride. Add in the sensors, specialized cameras, air sampling and filtration system, dual MGs, and automatic 40mm grenade launchers, plus its 30mm dual cannon on top, and there was little that could stand in its way.
"Who's driving?" shouted Private Dunn.
"You can drive,"
Reach said, suspecting the reason Dunn asked the question.
"You got a license, right?"
"Technically it's revoked, but I'm sober, and we're a long way from North Carolina."
"Good enough. Stanga, you handle comms and get someone on guns. Everyone else in the back with me."
Reach again pinged Lieutenant Sherman.
"Badger incoming. Point us where you want it."
"We'll use an IR strobe," Sherman replied.
Stanga activated the Badger's night vision and automatic targeting system. It would lock whichever gun they chose, this time the 2 light machine guns, on whatever gave off heat. The gunner would still have to approve a firing solution, an extra step to avoid hitting friendly units with the death machine straight from the bleeding edge of United States R&D.
"Hey, that helps, Sergeant,"
said Dunn, as the forward windshield provided an IR view of the terrain.
"Was trying to figure out where the headlights were."
"Do you see the IR strobe?" Reach asked from the back.
"Roger, I see it."
The Badger rolled along the edge of the forest, folding over saplings and pulverizing shrubbery as it weaved its way to the line's thin southern section. Tracer rounds zipped toward the vehicle, fired too high to connect. The weapons system locked onto the origin point of the fire. The gunner approved each firing solution with the press of a button, and the Badger did the rest, cutting down its target with automated 50 cal fire before cycling to the next target location. One by one, the enemies dropped. After 5 such bursts of hell from the Badger's guns, the rest of the Rupak assaulters either went weapons cold or turned and started to flee.
"Think they're still out there?"
Dunn called from the driver's seat. Reach stood up to assume manual control of the guns, intent on punishing any Rupak soldiers he found in the open. It wasn't long before his eyes started to spy targets hiding among the trees, the same green dot interface telling him exactly where his shots would land. He opened up in quick 2-second bursts, each one obliterating its targets.
"Damn,"
Dunn whooped.
Almost feel bad about the ass-kicking you're handing out.
A similar celebration was happening in the back. Rupak ain't got no stinking badgers, Reach said dryly, prompting guffaws from the Rangers. The in-vehicle comm beeped.
This is Sergeant Soto. You can stop here.
Dunn brought the vehicle to a halt. A moment later, Soto was at the door.
Thanks for making the delivery, Soto said. Mind if I take over?
Now's as good a time as any, Sergeant, Reach replied. He retrieved his rifle from the holder within the Badger and dropped to the ground, the rest of the boys right behind him. Two Rangers from 1st Platoon scrambled inside the machine, the first taking the forward gunner's position, the second taking the rear.
I hate to give her up, Dunn said, easing himself out of the cockpit. We gonna get one of these on our lines?
We'll see, Reach said, nodding back toward Camp Ohio. Let's hump it back.
Stanga's squad exchanged insults with 1st Platoon as they departed before falling silent in the move toward the camp.
Thanks for the help, Sherman transmitted to Reach, using what was labeled, internally in his mind, the Rangers' command channel,
meaning that Captain Bosa was capable of hearing the exchange.
We're on the same team, and you're welcome, Reach answered. Glad I can be of some service. Not exactly the job I figured I'd have on this world.
You've done an exceptional job when we needed it, Bosa interjected. Alexa was right. I'm at the array building. See you both when you get here.
Guys, Reach said to his squad as they walked. Captain Bosa wants me. I'm gonna hustle up. See you around.
As he moved off, a chorus of farewells followed at his heels. He felt as though he was leaving friends. The odd sensation of knowing these men and then knowing him, despite never having interacted beyond nods and a few puffed moments of small talk, was surreal. It seemed natural when it happened, but felt otherworldly the moment Reach had time to reflect. His improved speed brought him to the camp with ease, where he was glad to see that the heavies, bipedal walkers with manipulative arms straight out of Aliens stuff, were rapidly clearing the camp under the stark white glare of floodlights. The 3-meter-tall metal machines were the equivalent of walking forklifts, front-end loaders, dump trucks, or whatever other kind of heavy machinery you needed them to be at any moment. Each came with enough accessories to complete most major construction, or destruction, any military project might need. They lacked only the combat engineers to effectively use them, though the small number of Space Force techs who'd survived cryo were doing all right. Reach slowed as one of the machines stepped in front of him. Maybe the engineer piloting it saw him, maybe not. It was always better to allow a heavy to have the right of way.
Reach.
It was Alexa.
Hey, there you are.
I'm getting used to having Captain America speed.
I imagine that's how it would feel. I'm sure Dr. Roman will be happy to hear your assessment regarding the enhancements.
Reach liked Roman and wondered how the man was doing. Roman had more than once boasted that he was the architect of everything involving this mission, which meant that he would inevitably take personal responsibility for the cryo failures that had cost so many lives. He wondered what that might do to the man's psyche.
Listen, Reach, you've impressed Captain Bosa, and of course the Rangers are more than willing to fight with you, to follow you. I made sure of that. But now you're at a crossroads, and it's very important that you make the right decision.
The array building was coming into view now.
What do you mean?
Captain Bosa will eventually want to commission you as an officer.
I'm just helping with the fight. More men are following in a week. He doesn't need...
Write it off as a predictive algorithm as you want, but it's going to happen, Reach. And you need to say no.
Okay.
Something is wrong here, Reach. Wrong on Amir. And I don't know what it is. I should, and I don't. And that's bothering me to no end. You are the most fully realized colonist the ship has. You are what everyone else was supposed to be, would ultimately become, if not for these complications. You need to remain independent and outside of the command hierarchy if we're going to survive.
This sounds heavy, Alexa, but fine, I won't rush to any decisions. Really, I kind of have my eye on being the president of Amir. Since there's no one who can run against me anyway, you know?
You don't mean that for a second.
Reach smiled. The AI already knew him too well.
No, I don't. Talk later.
Sooner than you think.